time is going to be a workshop. It's more about information . Even if we don't make the quorum, we will continue. We are six. We're running short of one person, but because we're not taking any decisions, we're going to continue. Let me begin by welcoming all the members and thank them, together with the staff members, for work well done on our oversight visit to Limpopo. We're still going to deal with that in a later meeting when we do an assessment. But that program continues. Honorable Mubu, that program is running, is steaming ahead, it's at full steam. Nobody's going to stop it. We're moving into other provinces. I'm busy negotiating even the others which must go outside, but because I don't want to give promises or raise hopes and then I fail, you tell me, I'll announce once we've done the proper negotiations with the powers that be. But you know where we're supposed to go. Let me just check if there are any apologies. I know that Honorable Magama and Honorable Manana are with Public Works. That's what I was told, that for these 3 weeks, they will be with Public Works. Yes, Honorable Mo.
Honorable Mkhalapa is on leave.
Honorable Mkhalapa.
It's personal leave.
That is a family responsibility leave. That's what the records are saying. Mam Kowa, there's a written apology. Denominational prayer meeting and the doctor's appointment. There's a standing apology of Honorable General Bantu Olomisa. It's a standing apology. I'm not sure if he's still the member of this committee. But I'll look for the elders to guide me one day properly. I'm coming from an organization. If you have been absent for more than 3 meetings, you're automatically done away with. That's the organization where I'm coming from. Those are the apologies. We will note them. And in terms of our agenda, we have 2 items. One is an item which is going to be led by Diko, briefing us on the activities and continuing projects which are funded under the ARF, African Renaissance Fund, but also hinting on SAPA. Where are the processes now? And then the second item on the agenda is going to be International Treaties Workshop. We'll just make an announcement. I will allow you, after those announcements, to make your own announcement on any other business. Let's not waste time. I've spoken to the DG yesterday. He himself was supposed to be here. But we all know as international relations people that the president is on the way to Russia, state visit. So technically and the backup people like the DG are very central to that process. That's why the DG is not here today. And the DG had phoned me personally to apologize and raise this issue. However, I sent Dr. Harvey Short to come and make a presentation from DICO. He's not very short. Over to you, Dr. Harvey. You're welcome, Chief.
I thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you very much for this privilege to present to you the Africa Renaissance Fund, to you and the members, the honorable members. Chief, there is a sense of sadness, but also a sense of great excitement. I was in before this committee when we had to take this bill through Parliament, the Africa Renaissance Fund. And then we were very excited about this new thing called the Africa Renaissance Fund. And where we are at the moment is we're winding down the business of this fund for this bigger thing to come, this Satpa. So there is a sense of sadness that we'll say goodbye to this thing, but the big excitement for the one that is to come. We've circulated to the members a copy of this presentation. We've attached to that a list of the Africa Renaissance Fund projects. If you could allow me just to run through the presentation and then just to look at some of the projects. Chair, I'm aware that there is going to be a presentation to this committee on 11 August on the establishment or the progress with regard to the establishment of the South African Development Partnership Agency, SADPA. So I will just refer to the linking of ARF to SADPA, but if you would allow me that the discussion on SADPA to be on that on the 11th, when some of my other colleagues will be here. I sit on a task team for SADPA, so I know a few things about it, but I would rather for the full discussion, the questions and answers on SADPA to be kept over and for the 11th. Chair, what I'll be doing in my presentation is I will give a little bit of a background of the African Renaissance Fund, its alignment with our foreign policy, the guiding principles, the institutional and strategic approach, then also just look at our funding model, just look at the monies that have gone through this fund, and then, Chair, what I would very much like to concentrate on is the summary and a way forward. Seeing that we are in the process of winding down the business of this fund. Now, the fund itself, the Act number 51 of 2000, was promulgated by then President Thabo Mbeki on 22 January 2001 as an Act. The core business of the ARF is technical assistance, while in terms of the Act, it also provides for emergency assistance when required. The principal advantage of the ARF was the fact that it allowed the South African government to, in a proactive way, to provide financial assistance to projects and programs aimed at democracy, good governance, prevention and resolution of conflict, development, humanitarian assistance, and human resource development, by granting of loans and grants within the framework of the Africa Renaissance. Now, at the time when this Act came into being, it pioneered three things. The first was it brought Africa Renaissance into legislation. It has not, up to that stage, this was the first time that it actually happened in the South African governance system. The second thing that it did, it allowed government to interact or to provide financial assistance to other countries, not necessarily to governments. I'll come back to that point now. And then the third thing that happened, you will recall that 2000, there were these floods in Mozambique. And South African Air Force helicopters were flying there. And they were running out of petrol. And a number of governments approached the South African government and said, we can provide you with petrol to fly those helicopters. And we didn't have an account to accept that money. So this is why this fund was then called the Africa Renaissance and International Cooperation Fund. That's the full name of it. So that it could accept money from a third party and pay for something that the fund was funding. So three unique concepts that were pioneered by this fund. Since its establishment, we've very closely aligned it with DECA mandate. Specifically, the continuation of the continued prioritization of the African agenda. As you know, our goals for the African continent are the resolution of conflict and then the building of a framework in which socio-economic development can take place. And for us as DECA, you cannot have the one without the other. Socio-economic development cannot take place without peace and stability. And the other way around, that socio-economic development is necessary in the context of addressing the root causes of conflict and instability. So the fund has always been guided by South Africa's foreign policy. Now, at the time when the fund came into being, we did have in DECO, or at DFA as it was then, we did have a technical assistance fund. This fund had come over a number of years from the early 70s. Now, what this fund did was it was a bilateral fund. It was government to government. It was reactive. You had to receive from another government a request, and then you had to respond to that. And then it had no mechanism for third-party funding. Now, when the ARF came into being, it was envisaged that the ARF would be something smaller, that in relation to something bigger, that something bigger would be the Technical Assistance Fund, but that the Africa Renaissance Fund could then focus more on multilateral, on organizations, and then in terms of the bilateral, that it could also fund institutions other than government. Not necessarily funding a South Africa government, funding something in another government, but that it could, we use the word parties here, not political parties, but organizations other than government. Then instead of being reactive, we envisage that it could be proactive, that we could identify projects and programs within the Africa Renaissance framework, and that we could then fund that. The idea was that the little money that we had to make a big bang. It had to do something big. That was what we had in mind. And then, as I mentioned in my introduction, the mechanism for third-party funding, that it could allow money to come from outside into this fund, and that we could use that money. Now, this was the advantage, that it could work in a proactive way, that it could that we could identify these projects ourselves, that we didn't have to wait for them to come to us. But then, when this act was promulgated in January 2001, the Technical Assistance Fund was abolished. So instead of being supplementary to the bigger fund, the ARF became a standalone fund. And in the process, it adopted some of the character of a technical assistance fund, which caused it to be responsive and bilateral. So, Chair, now that we're in our 10th year, I think we've got to understand that this fund acted as a technical assistance fund, but it was also an Africa Renaissance fund. So it had almost a dual character. Now, the overall purpose of the ARF was to give practical effect to the Africa Renaissance vision, and at the core of this vision was an economic and social development agenda for Africa. The Act gave us very specific directives as to both the objectives and the operating mechanisms for the ARF. Now, when The second reading of the bill in Parliament was on 6 October 2000, and then Foreign Deputy Minister Aziz Pahad gave an indication of what we were going to use this fund for. And he said we were going to do promotion of democracy and good governance. He said we were going to do human resource development. He said we were going to do socio-economic development and integration. Then humanitarian assistance and disaster relief in Africa, as well as elsewhere in the world. Although this fund is called the Africa Renaissance Fund, the Act doesn't limit us only to Africa. It is mainly for Africa, but it doesn't limit us. And then the last one is prevention and resolution of conflict. Now, in terms of strategic position, the IFA has a political mandate based on our foreign policy, as well as a developmental mandate. And we're very well aware that there are close cross-cutting linkages between the two. It's if you look at the list of projects, which we'll do just now, it's focused on projects in terms of humanitarian, economic development, infrastructure, capacity building, and security sector reform. Since its establishment, the funding has paid increasing attention to supporting post-conflict reconstruction development efforts. We're very well aware that these projects are a long-term commitment in order to be sustainable. For example, our efforts in the DRC, where the ARF went in first and paid for a number of projects and programs, but the idea was that other funding would then come in to take over and give these projects a more long-term implementation. In terms of the operational function, at the time that the ARF was established, we didn't really have a PFMA. So we had to introduce a very novel mechanism where ministers of then Foreign Affairs, the Act refers to Foreign Affairs, now International Relations and Cooperation, and Finance had to concur on projects. There was an advisory committee. The advisory committee would make recommendations to the two ministers and they would have to concur. So this mechanism gave us good checks and balances, but also gave us a lot of flexibility to deal with issues. The fund was driven within the Africa Multilateral Branch of DIRCO by a sub-directorate. So we didn't really have a good proactive planning mechanism, and we didn't really have a good monitoring and evaluation mechanism in place. As I mentioned to you earlier, it was supposed to be a smaller fund that was working in relative to a bigger fund. But then as we went along, we found that our face serious challenges in terms of a standard criteria of how to assess and evaluate projects, and also a lack of a standard project proposal template. We were using our embassies in Africa as the implementing agents, and we needed a common understanding of what is this assessment and evaluation of projects. And then there was this, we did an exercise with the Technical Assistance Unit of National Treasury where they did a diagnostic, and one of the issues there was that the need was identified to strengthen the ARF's administrative capacity. Now, the funding model that we're using is independent funding. We have a budget for DIRCO and we have a separate budget for the Africa Renaissance Fund. As I said, the ARF Act prescribes that ministers of international relations of cooperation and finance should concur on any proposed project before funding is released. And I just say on that, the agreed principle has been that the two ministers will not fund a project that has been. They will fund a project that is still to come. There has been one or two exceptions to that, but that has been the general principle. There's an advisory committee, which is chaired by my Director General, comprises three senior DIRCO officials and two senior National Treasury officials. They meet three, four times a year they evaluate the projects and then they make recommendations on projects to ministers, and then the two ministers have to sign the letters of concurrence before the funds can be released. The AFS Secretariat is located in Durka in Branch Africa Multilateral. We receive and prepare project documentation for the advisory committee. We service the committee, and then we assist with the follow-up on the decisions of the committee and of the ministers. The assets of the ARF are retained in an interest-bearing account with the Corporation for Public Deposits of the Reserve Bank. That would be money appropriated by Parliament for the ARF, money received by way of repayment of any loan, interest received on any loan, and then money accruing to the ARF from any other source. That is the third-party funding that I referred to. The Act refers to the previous Act, which was the Economic Promotions Act. By the time that we started, we had about 170 million in that fund. So the initial startup capital for the ARF came from the from that Act. So we had about 170 million. In terms of budget appropriation, Chair, we started small, 50 million for the first couple of years. It went up steadily to 2008-09 when we then received about just under 700 million. Last year we had 631, plus then you will recall that we received through the ARF an additional 300 million that went for to Zimbabwe for emergency food aid. For the current financial year, we're on 431 million. Our balance at the moment, uncommitted funds, is 652 million. Now, Chair, it's a big amount, or a relatively big amount. We've had a number of advisory committee meetings this year, but we've been, I think, a little bit of tougher with, or the committee has been tougher with the presentations. We haven't released that much money, mainly because we want to use this as the startup capital for SATPA. SATPA has, no money has been appropriated for SATPA yet. And because we can roll over the funds on this account, we are aware that we can still spend on ARF before the end of the next financial year, or of the current financial year. But there is an inclination to keep some of this money for the startup capital for SATPA. So ARF is in its 10th year. The intention is now to start handing over to SATPA. So what have we learned in the 10 years? I think we've developed ARF into a very effective tool to support the South African government's policy to promote democracy, good governance, to the prevention and resolution of conflict, socioeconomic development and integration, humanitarian assistance and human resource development. I think South Africa has shown that we prepared not only to promote the African agenda politically, but we can also put our money down. It's a people-centered fund. The ARF funding is applied directly to projects without any administrative costs. The officials working with ARF, every administrative aspect of ARF is paid for from the Durka budget. I think ARF has allowed us to set up a very good point of reference in terms of South African ODA. It's given us a base to work with when we go into SATPA. It's enabled us to become involved in critical challenges on the continent in such a way that because of South Africa's standing in the international area, that we've been able to bring other people with us. When we involved in the DRC, we put money down in the DRC, other countries also put money down. When we involve somewhere else in Africa, just because we are there and we prepare to put money down, other international donors also then, or international cooperating partners also are prepared to put money down. If they see South Africa does something, they follow us. So ARF has given us a very good entry into that. Chair, you would be aware that on the cabinet meeting of December 2009 approved the conceptual approach to the establishment of SADPA, the South African Development Partnership Agency. Chair, on this name, can I just mention that I think there's an I missing. Like we had a missing R in DIRCO, I think there's an I missing there. It could be South African International Development Partnership Agency. Now, what Cabinet said is it approved the principle that work leading to the establishment of the agency should focus on integration rather than on initiating a new process. So in terms of interpretation, the reference to integration specifically relates to the integration of the Africa Renaissance Fund into SADPA. Pending the formal establishment of SADPA, our current initiatives within our is still the revision and improvement of our processes, specifically development of systems, of cycles, as well as the ongoing technical capacity building of our staff. We have a memorandum of understanding with Norway, with NORAD, and with New Zealand, in which they train our staff and they assist us with some of the our capacity building programs. We realize that this will feed into the process of establishing SADPA, and the skills will be then transferred to SADPA. Our activities also include the integration of an IT-based project cycle management approach, new templates for project appraisal, specifically also for monitoring and evaluation, and then determining the role of South African private sector and NGOs. Very often our projects have not been to the benefit of South African NGOs and private sector. So we're learning how to, best practices of how to allow our own private sector and NGOs also to participate in the programs. But the understanding is that these programs will then, you know, the work that we're doing will then be integrated into SADPA once that structure is ready. Okay, this is the end of my presentation. What I would then like to refer to is the annexure that we've given you. I do apologize that the text, that the font is very small, but you'll see it two or three pages on there is a bigger font. We're not testing your eyesight on that. So at the top it says, our funded projects to date. Chair, we refer to the projects that we have stretching from current back to about 2007. It's under the headings, the country or the recipient, the amount, the project name, status and comments, and then the year commenced. These are the projects that we have. I will try to answer any questions on that. I have the project descriptions here, but where if you want the finer detail, I might have to send it to you, after the meeting. So, Chair, that is my formal presentation. I thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, Dr. Short. I'm going to allow the members to interact with this presentation. They would pose questions, they would make comments, and so on. But just before I allow them, I want the members to note that on the loose one, which was circulated, which I think is the last document he has referred to, on the funded projects of the ARF, it's very interesting to note that on page 2, which is 6, eh? It's written 6. The biggest country, or the country receiving the biggest funding, is Zimbabwe. It's very important to note that. And it's important to note that it is followed by the DRC. Zimbabwe at 300 times 2 million and 13.5. So that goes to about 613. Just above half a billion. And then you look at the DRC, which follows. No, it's Guinea-Conakry. And then it's followed by the DRC. So it's not just out of curiosity that we wanted to first go to Zimbabwe as part of our... If the taxpayers' money are spending such a lot of money, we must know how this money is spent. That's what informed that. And maybe my question would also be, that's adding to what the members will be asking. How do we monitor progress in terms of these projects? And a case in point is the DRC, which is very worrying to me when you read in the newspapers about the fate of some of the South African companies who have invested heavily in that country, e.g. Vodacom, on telecommunications. What you're reading about what's happening to Vodacom as if it's about to be kicked out in favor of other companies. It's worrying. We're not sure whether when you read that other people are going into the bush, are we progressing or regressing in that particular area? So to me then it's an area of interest. But previously, I think honorable members will agree with me, we thought that ARF, we were able to control this fund in terms of our own agenda. SADPA, we're very clear that it's going to be a partnership. Now, what we're worrying, if we're talking about the other one replacing this one, are we still going to be having that independence, that leverage, which we used to have with the ARF? Because in the other one, there will be other partners. Lastly, you might not answer this question. Maybe it's not something which you have debated thus far. If we were to respond positively to what we see as the request of the AU about sending our soldiers to Somalia, was it going to be out of this fund? I'm sorry to say, this is the real last one I must ask. You see, when we're talking about guiding principles in relation to how you deal with this funding, one of them, the first one you mentioned, was the promotion of democracy and good governance, providing electoral assistance. The PAP and the sub-regional structures of the PAP are very worried that the protocol signed in 2007 by the heads of state on governance and elections. In fact, it's a charter on democracy, governance, and elections. It has only been endorsed by 5 parliaments, and it needs 15 to be effected. Now, but what worries is, despite the fact that this thing is here, even us as the South African government, we have not signed. Would you know where is that process now? What is holding that process? Because this parliament has not yet endorsed that particular process, and it's of serious concern to us. In fact, it's on the basis of that on the 20th of August, We're having a joint meeting with trade and industry. We are having Justice Constitutional Review Committee and our counterparts in the NCOP. We are having a workshop on international treaties because we believe that we've been violating the constitution of this country when it comes to international treaties. A number of them have not come to Parliament, which were supposed to come to Parliament, not only those of the executive. And I want you to note that 20th of August, because it's a very serious one. The department must also be here to present in relation to that. I'm trying to link what you're briefing us and even with the other processes. But I will allow the members to raise their questions. Then we will give you a chance to respond. I've noted Honorable Korenov, Honorable Sundoza, Honorable Mubu, Sisomkul. Honorable Korenov.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation. I agree with the presenter, it's the end of a 10-year program, but it's also the beginning of something new. So we can be sad, but we can also be happy to say something new is coming out of this experience of the last 5 years. And I think what this fund started out to do to promote democracy and good governance, the prevention of and the resolution of conflict, socioeconomic development, human assistance, and human resource development, I think it's commendable. And I think we did achieve successes. This African Renaissance Fund originated from an act of Parliament. If it comes to an end, I want to get the assurance from DIRCO that this legal process will be followed to either recall the act or amend the act. So can you give us an indication what your program is, to recall the act or to bring this process to an end legally? Secondly, when you get such a long project coming to an end, I want to make an appeal to DIRCO that there must be a proper financial wind down of this project, of this act, of this fund, and I would appeal that there should be proper audited financial statements to wind it up. I don't want DIRCO to come back in a year's time in the near future to come and say they sort of all funny things happened because they were not properly financial winding down of this. It should be an audited financial statements winding down the fund and transferring it to a new beginning. On your projects to date, I see many of these projects started last year. Some of the projects are still to commence. I want to ask you, how are you going to manage that transfer from the African Renaissance Fund to the South African Development Partnership Agency, especially with the three biggest countries that the chairperson has referred to? Zimbabwe, by far, over 600 million. The two projects started a year ago and 2 years ago, respectively. So it's fairly new. In Zimbabwe, 300 million for economic recovery program and 300 for the agricultural assistance program. How are you going to manage the monitoring of those projects and handing it over to the new SATPA? The same with the DRC. Four programs started 2 years ago. How are you going to manage that transfer for the 101 million? And the same with the third biggest or second biggest is Guinea-Conakry, 172 million, also project that started 12 to 24 months ago. So I need the assurance from DIRCO that there will be a proper financial winding down of this fund so that there should be no financial comebacks in 12 to 18 months to this committee. I've already asked you the dates of commencements. It's fairly recently. How are you going to continue? And my last question, the 652 million in reserves, that will be a start capital for SATPA. How are you going to transfer that fund? Will be there due processes? Will it be documented? How is that transfer going to happen? My worry, Comrade Chair, is that once you wind something down and you start something new and there's not a proper transfer and building the bridge between the two, that's where the unfortunate things start to happen. And I'm only seeking assurances from the Department of International Relations and Cooperation that this process will be properly managed, not only as far as the projects is concerned and what you ask, Chairperson, the monitoring of the projects, but also the financial winding down. Otherwise, we're going to have comebacks on this one. Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Koranov. Honorable Sunduza.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Doctor, for the presentation. My question is basically more like Honorable Koranov, but I'm worried about the monitoring of the funds that we... I mean, there's a lot of money that we're pumping on this fund. As Chair also was noting Zimbabwe, when we said it was no, I mean, 800 million. How do you monitor that money? Why I'm asking that, I believe sometimes if a country is more of this, of the there is political instability, you just want to worry about the funds that you have pumped in. And how often is it could you get reports? Because obviously in what you have given in, you must have reports. I think I'll be more on Zimbabwe because it's a lot of money that we have pumped, and you would find some of the questions is that how does South Africa assist Zimbabwe? I mean, if we pump a lot of money like this, we need to know what is happening. Because it says on agricultural reform, you know, and part of the political problems are agricultural in terms of land and agriculture. That's my main concern right now. But also, how do you evaluate how to give out the money? Because I'm looking at Guinea-Conakry. It says emergency cleaning of the capital city. I just want an understanding. You know, when you say cleaning, I'm thinking about the real cleaning. You know, how do you evaluate how much is it? And how many times is it monitored? Do people go there? Do you get reports? I'm more worried about what we are pumping because this is taxpayers' money. And we account at the end of the day. So we need to know what is it. I think my last question, as I said, it's more like Honorable Koranov to say that if a project hasn't started, who does the audit? You know, because we still need to get an audit. And then you must know what we've pumped. I think that's all that. Thank you.
Honorable Mubu.
Thank you, Chair. I do agree with all my colleagues that have asked questions, but probably just to expand on some of those questions and get a bit more clarity. On the two countries that I'm very worried about is Zimbabwe that my colleague Honorable Sunduza has mentioned, but another one is also Guinea-Conakry. On Zimbabwe, we pumped 600 million rands on agriculture reform. But at the same time, we know that agriculture in Zimbabwe is one of the things that have really just destabilized. There are land grabs, farms are being taken over, production has gone down. So what kind of reform are we talking about when it's pumping 600 million of taxpayers' money into Zimbabwe in agriculture? We want to know how this money has been used productively, not only to improve the agriculture production there, but specifically on what? Secondly, we spent 13.5 million on elections in Zimbabwe in 2008. And this we know, these were disputed elections, which have resulted in Zimbabwe now being in a marriage of convenience between parties. And that money wasn't a waste, that we pumped money that was not result, or that did not result in a pumped money in an election that was disputed and resulted in the kind of arrangement that we see now in Zimbabwe. Thirdly, I wonder whether there's any communication around these monies that we dispense around the continent in terms of people knowing, getting to know what South Africa is doing outside. Because if you come to think about it, if you add up all these amounts, they're huge amounts. To people, the taxpayer, do they know that this is what South Africa is doing abroad? And because some of them would argue that how can they be spending so much money on these projects when there's such dire needs at home here? And they're spending money on Guinea-Conakry, which is, I think, right now it's under military rule or something like that. I mean, these are questions that I think need to be answered. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, my Honourable. Honourable Makhau.
Thank you, Chair. Like the other colleagues, I think I'm covered on the other issues, but my issue is on Guinea-Conakry. While we are saying we are assisting or whatever in the rice production, I want to know or understand. We do not, as far as I know, we do not have the expertise as a country to produce rice. So how is it possible that we assist other people in rice production? And the other project is the Pan-African Women's Organization. It is said here $11 million was allocated for that project. It has been finalized. I would just like to know what is it that we did with the Pan-African Women's Organization with that amount. Thank you, Chair.
Maluskosan. You can even comment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll just be brief. I also have questions. Let me start with the... You said that Dr. you're holding on some of the funds to start the new project, the SATA one. Now, I simply want to know what happens to the submissions for new projects submitted by other... do you still hold them at abeyance also until you start the new project? With Zimbabwe, I know that there is a tendency here at home now to say when farmers say they want to go to Zimbabwe or Mozambique or Zambia to start new projects there, we say fine, they can go. But when I'm more concerned with the farming agreements that come out of there, we are not concerned about the socio-economic implications of the agreements themselves. The impact they have on the ordinary people who are going to be working within those farms, farm workers, laborers, we don't look at the agreements from that aspect. As a result, we are usually accused of transporting the very tools that have been violating the rights of basic rights of people in South Africa. We're transporting them into the neighboring countries, simply because we don't look at the agreements. The other point I want to mention really is on, I didn't hear the good doctor saying anything about NEPAD in relation to this African Renaissance Fund. Because I remember there was the discussion when the fund was initiated was really between NEPAD and how do you sustain the homegrown development projects. And there was also, a hidden political agenda, which it's not mentioned anywhere in any case, but it had to do with, because we could easily have said these projects or NEPAD would be funded through, for instance, we could have gone to CEDA, the Canadian Development Agency. We could have gone to the USAID. We could have gone to the Swedish. But then we decided to say, look, we must have a homegrown development fund, which is going to deal with these issues. Hence, you had that African Renaissance Fund coming into it. Because the other problem that we foresaw was, which I think the other structure that you are now pursuing would have to deal with, the question of the political and economic sovereignty. Because when we did that, we were also running away from the problem of the political and economic sovereignty,
which may have to be attached to the Canadians, the Swedish, or the Americans. It had to be attached to Africa. Before there's any follow-up, we'll allow you just to respond where you can be able to.
Chair, I thank you. I just want to make a correction. I'm not a doctor. I'm not there yet. So thank you very much for the title, but I wouldn't know where it comes from. But I'll enjoy it while the moment is here. But thanks very much. Yeah. Chair, the monitoring and evaluation is kind of the refrain that goes through. On the monitoring and evaluation, I just want to explain that as director for the Africa Renaissance Fund, I'm director NEPAD, ATRM, and Africa Renaissance Fund. So I manage the fund. I have an advisory committee that decide on the projects, and I follow up on the decisions of the advisory committee. I'm not a project implementer. The project implementer is whoever will ask for financial assistance. If it is a project in DRC, it would be Department of Water Affairs, or it would be Department of Agriculture in Zimbabwe, or it would be National Treasury for the second tranche, for the second 300 million. So the project implementation is being done by some other responsible department. The monitoring and evaluation is done by them, but they have to report to us. We want to see those reports. So I just wanted to explain that. I'm going to ask answer to the specific questions about monitoring and evaluation. So I go to your second question, will there still be leverage? I believe so. SAPA is a South African institution. It will be a South African institution. It will be the cabinet decision of December 2009 said it will be placed within DIRCO. It will be responsible to the Minister of International Relations and Cooperation and to no other foreign country. It's a South African institution. So, I'm convinced that the leverage will still be there, but that it will be linked very closely to South African foreign policy. Chair, your question on Somali, I cannot respond to, whether we're going to send troops or not. But it begs just a response in terms of payment for peacekeeping operations. It was either my deputy minister at the time, Pahad, or I do recall that when it went into the second session in Parliament in 2000, that the minister was not here, but we had an acting minister, who made the point that the fund will not be used for two things. One is peacekeeping operations, because the minister argued that you can deplete the ARF in one day when it comes to peacekeeping operations. And the second point that the minister raised was also the same refers to or applies to infrastructure projects, which are and look like telephone numbers if you look at the size of some of those projects. So if you go through the list, in 10 years we haven't funded any peacekeeping operations. We've tried to stay away from that, knowing that it can. It can just empty our coffers. However, when I have ventured into infrastructure, you will note the Sani Pass, the road from Sani Top to Mokhtlong, and then the lower Lesotho, the dam. It's one of the dams in Lesotho. So yes, from what the acting minister said in 2000, we've stayed away from the one, but we've ventured into the other one, into infrastructure. Sir, your third question was about the electoral assistance, the protocol. I will not be able to answer to that, to respond to that. My next-door neighbor in DIRCO is the Director for African Union. And if you allow me, I can ask him the question and ask him contact our office and provide you with a response to that. If I go on the next set of questions, the Honourable Kurnoff, I think the advantage that we've got is that we had the previous act, and I can give you the full title. It was called the Economic Cooperation Promotion Loan Fund. That was a fund that was started in 1968 as a slush fund for the previous government. It paid for things like a presidential palace in Paraguay, and it paid for projects in Comoros and in Malawi and in the building of Lilongwe as the capital. This was since from 68. So I don't think the idea here is to go into what that fund did. But what happened is when the ARF came into being, that all that legislation had to come to an end. So there is an item in the ARF Act that says the previous fund is hereby disestablished, and any unexpended money held or standing to the credit of the previous fund immediately prior to its disestablishment is hereby ceded, assigned, and transferred to the ARF. That comes from the Act. We know that it's an Act of Parliament, and we respect that. Up to the day that the ARF Act is repealed, the ARF will still operate. It can only be disestablished by an Act of Parliament. The new SADPA will also come in with an Act. I know my department is busy with that. It's done the circuit within the department. It's gone through a couple of drafts. Luckily, the legal person that we're using for this is the same legal person that we used initially in 2000 for the ARF Act. So I want to assure the honourable members that we will not be acting outside of the legal process of an act. It will be done properly. In terms of the financial wind down and the auditing the financial statements, I think the question referred to, or the statement was that there should be no financial comebacks. Every year there is an annual report for DIRCA, but there is also an annual report for ARF. It appears every year. The two come out together. We present audited statements every year. The last one, the one for 2009 to 2010, is available. So there is a very proper auditing system in place, and we stay within that. Now, what is going to be interesting with ARF is that some of the projects that we refer to are multi-year programs. We've got a letter of concurrence for multi-year programs to run. So you don't need a letter of concurrence for every year. You have it once, and then it allows for multi-year. So the auditing is going to be, I think ARF will allow those to run through. SADPA will just have to look at the programs that are still running. This whole process of handing over will be an organized process, and it will be prescribed by the SADPA Act. So I don't think there would be any problems there or any comebacks. The projects still to commence, you know, we're working for a seamless transition from ARF to SADPA. That SADPA will then just take over from ARF, where ARF is left. But ARF is still there. The Act is still in place. So it answers one of the other questions. What about submissions that we receive now? We still look at them. As I said in my presentation, we expect that there would still be about two meetings of the advisory committee. We receive applications on a very regular basis. So until ARF comes formally to an end, we will still receive those submissions and we will still process the money. The point that I made is that we're just inclined to see how much money we can take over as starting capital for SATPA. That also addresses, I think, the Honourable Kuno's question about the transfer of the $652 million to SATPA. Then, in terms of how do we monitor, and specifically the questions about Zimbabwe, there were two payments to Zimbabwe. The first one was the $300 million to Department of Agriculture for agriculture assistance. It was very specifically aimed at provision of food, provision of seed, and provision of diesel for the planting season. This was handled by Department of Agriculture. It was December 2008. We did the transfer of the money in about March, April of 2009. Our transfer was to Department of Agriculture, and we were very specific in asking them about the distribution of the money. We received the reports from them, and I think it was money well spent. The second $300 million went to National Treasury, and that went for budget support. We did that in three tranches. The first tranche of $100 million was transferred from National Treasury to Zimbabwe, and with request that we can only release the second tranche once they provide us with the necessary reports, which their Minister of Finance did. Then the second tranche was released to National Treasury, and the third one. On both of these, the one was Department of Agriculture, the other one was National Treasury. They were the project implementers, and they assured us that they were happy with what was happening to their money. The elections in Zimbabwe, so I wouldn't like to comment on the outcome of the elections. Our part was to fund the South African participation as part of the SADC observer mission to the elections themselves and then to the runoff election. We funded the, as I said, the South African component of the SADC observer mission. So it was a SADC mission, it wasn't a South African mission. And I think SADC pronounced itself on the election. Agriculture reform, our involvement in Zimbabwe was not specifically in terms of agriculture reform. Our involvement was, as I stated, was in terms of emergency food supply, of seed to be planted for that plant season, and then diesel for the tractors, for the mechanical, for the agricultural equipment. So we didn't participate in agricultural reform as such. The question about communication, about branding. Perhaps in the 10 years that we've been in existence, one of the criticisms can be that we never branded the African Renaissance Fund. There was a debate whether we should do it or we should not do it. I think our experience is that any agency, any cooperating partner comes in and hands over a small amount and makes big noise about it, how good they are. But it was the decision of the South African government not to make that big noise. It every now and then one has heard a reference. The other day when the Minister of Environment, when she did the handover of the money at Sani Pass, she made a big announcement that this money comes from the African Renaissance Fund. But we've very much left it to the implementing agents to make the announcements. Maybe in SATPA it'll be an issue that we will take up. How do we brand SATPA? We did not have a logo for the Africa Renaissance Fund, apart from the South African flag, to say this was from South Africa. Guinea-Conakry, the rice project, I think it's one of the most interesting projects that I think we've been involved in. No, we don't grow rice in South Africa, and we don't have the technical expertise to do that. But this project came into being through our involvement with the new Africa-Asia Strategic Partnership, the NASP. We're at a meeting of NASP, the NASP Summit. The Vietnamese offered their assistance to Africa in terms of technology, the technology that they have to grow rice. So this project was a trilateral project. How can we use the Vietnamese offer and their technology to the benefit of an African country? And then when the request from Guinea-Conakry came that they needed, apparently their staple diet is rice, and they needed that technology. So it was a case of linking the dots. South Africa providing the money, Vietnam providing the technical know-how, and Guinea-Conakry being the recipient. In terms of PAWU, the Pan-African Women's Organization, again, Chair, we were not the implementing agent, PAWU was. But I do recall that what happened is that in Angola there was a meeting of PAWU where South Africa was elected as the chair and asked to convene the next meeting. And PAWU came to us, or came to the our advisory committee, and asked for assistance with a conference. I think if you look at the list, it's one of the only conferences that PAWU, that ARF has ever funded, was the PAWU one. I think the benefit of hosting that meeting in South Africa and assisting PAWU to make sure that that organization survived and that it becomes a power in the continent. I think that was way to them against the money that was paid for it, and the reports that we received from that were also very good reports. Chair, I think I've responded to most of the questions. I just want to emphasize the fact that we're the fund managers and we're not the project implementers. So the project implementation is done by somebody else. Yes, we do go. We do go to undertake field visits to go and check on some of these projects. But we very much reliant on the reports that we receive from the implementing agents. I think that will be an interesting debate for SAPA. Is SAPA also just a fund manager, or does it have a project management office? And I think the way that things are going, you will note that SAPA will actually be an implementing agent as well. So I think that's one of the lessons that we learned from the ARF. The reference to MAPAD, it's in the concept paper that we did. There's a very close link between what we do in terms of MAPAD and what we do here. Again, the point is that we don't just talk about MAPAD, but we're willing to put money down to fund some of those projects. I'm not sure of this hidden political agenda that you refer to, sir. Maybe you know something that I don't. But right from the beginning, our interaction with SADC, our interaction with African Union, our interaction with MAPAD, is that yes, Africa must be prepared to put money down. And this is something that we're encouraging other countries to do continuously. That our programs in Africa, that at least there must be a commitment of Africa to put money down first, and then other people can come in. So if that is the hidden political agenda that you're referring to, I'm not sure. But Chair, I would like to stand there. I've tried to respond to all of the questions.
I know that members might want to have the second bite, but it might be interesting to us to know if there any criteria which you use for funding the project. Any particular criteria. And if you listen to the members, there was a lot of interest on Zimbabwe. because of the significant amounts we're talking about. As a committee, we are aware that the Auditor General gave a clean bill in terms of the ARF fund. We know that, or the funds which are under the ARF. But as a committee, we insist we still have a prerogative to actually confirm these projects if they did meet their objectives. And we would want this to be communicated to DICO as a whole. Hence, we're taking interest, picking up some of the countries which we wanted to visit and see, as one honorable member put it, the taxpayers' money, if it's spent properly, and we're going to pursue that. We feel very strong about that. Honorable members, I can see there's a follow-up. Honorable Sundoza, Babu Skhosana, and Koranov.
Thank you, Chair. I think there's a lot of interest in this now. I just want to make a comment, you know, and I think in such next time we'll serve all the implementers of this program so that we can understand what is really happening, you know, because we'd want full answers, not only from the, because you see, if the, that maybe Africa Multilateral are supposed to be here as well, you know, because we've got a lot of questions as members. But I do not understand whether it was a political decision coming on the issue that I was going to raise a chair to say that in our public diplomacy meetings, whatever that we do, it's important. Remember, as Parliament, we still, as much as we are public reps, we still need to educate our own people and constituencies to say that if we take so much money outside Africa, outside South Africa, then our people should know about that, you know. Not only the internal part. I don't know how was that decision taken, even if it was a political decision. I stand in this house to say to me it's incorrect. Number one, yesterday I was listening to a professor from Nigeria, Sarara. What I was saying, South Africans, we forget easily. I was a bit concerned on the statement about those xenophobic attacks. Because, Chair, people are not educated that now we did not forget we are still funding African countries. We still bring relief funds. It's important for us to educate. I think as a report back that we will also engage further. I am not happy with that response that we cannot tell Africa, South Africans, what we are doing to Africa. Because even Zimbabweans, I'm very clear that some of them are not even aware about this fund, about this AR fund. Because if you remember some of the questions, Chair, at Big Bridge, where South Africa is not helping with anything. If you check this money, 600 million, how many houses we could have built in South Africa? How many hospitals we could have built? How many schools we could have built? How many health projects we could have made? But because we are part of that African dream, that's why this money is coming out. I think I should make this comment because politically we are not moving in the right direction. Because other departments in South Africa, they're just very clear, very, very transparent about what they are doing. So I could not understand where is this coming from. Because this would be a positive impact on what? Because if you stand on the ground, you say, as the department, we are assisting Africa. There's no issue about saying that Africa is not part of us. You know, I thought I should make that comment, Chair. It's very important, and I think it's one that we have to follow up on. I understand the representative from DICO, there are many questions that she could not answer. I'm still very worried about the issue of monitoring, Chair. I try to answer, but I'm not very pleased, you know, at the end of the day. Because I know I was asked by Paul, by Honorable Mahau, but these are some of the things that we still maintain, that to get continuous reports. Because according to us, Paul is very dead. And I think that it was supposed to host the secretariat, and it was supposed to host it full-time in secretariat. Nothing is happening. So these are things that I'm worrying about. We put a lot of money, but then there's no continuous monitoring or evaluation. I think it's one issue that must be taken up by the department. And Honorable Mabu, you put it very correctly on the issue of land. I think both of us are very concerned about this issue. Because if we go out here and take this report, maybe to the people see this report, they will say, which land are you talking about? Which agricultural reform? You see, if this land was going to a militarization of Zimbabwe, we would agree and say, no, the military is very visible. So as DRC and other countries. But when we talk about the agriculture, it's the most depleted part of the economic growth of Zimbabwe. So I'm very concerned about this report that we've been given. I think it's one thing that we must, for our president of the department to come, the one of them, material, whatever, project implementers, I think that's the first step we should take. Thank you.
Further comment? Babusko-san?
Thank you, Mr. Ngeni. It's not a question, just a comment. First, let me support that viewpoint there that you said that we don't have the brand, we didn't do the brand, but we are doing good things. You mentioned the project which the minister was unveiling. I think the question of a good story which is badly told. It's not told very well, but it's a good story. The Honourable Mabuza was asked a question about how do we inform the people that these are the kinds of monies that are being spent by South Africa in different parts of the continent. Now, the other day, I did say that it is not good for this committee to simply stay silent on issues like this ones. If we're going to promote what we call public diplomacy, we also, as a committee, have a mandate, and the chairman has a mandate, to make press statements about some of the reports that we receive in this committee. For instance, if you look at this report that we've just received, it has a lot of information, which if researchers could put it together from this committee and give it to the chairman to make a press statement about it, so that the public ought to know that these are the things that are happening. I think we do to answer the question raised by my sister there, that how do you really inform the public? Even those who come from outside South Africa, who do not know that South Africa is helping. But statements like those ones, because now this is a legitimate information. It's not concocted. It's legitimate. And the figures are legitimate. So we don't have to worry about it. We simply have to summarize it into a press statement and let the chairman give it to the press, give it to the public. The point I was raising here when I was talking about the other agenda, I think it was within the context of simple relations between states, that when we were discussing these issues of NEPAD and funding and so on, we also had to think about the protection of the sovereignty, the political and the economic sovereignty of South Africa, including the African continent. We knew that there were funds outside South Africa which we could use, but then there was also a question of too much dependency on outside funds. And once you do that, then you are affecting your sovereignty. Whether it's political or economic, it could be your fate could be decided somewhere else. So you would have to do that. So I think that context I was talking about the political objective.
Honorable Korenhoff and then Honorable Mubuyo, the last.
Thank you, Chairperson. And allow me a comment and a request. I think we've identified a weakness in that you cannot give money to a country and leave it to the implementing agencies alone. We need to go further than that. And I think what you've said is a lack of project management capacity as a fund manager is a weakness. And we have to address that. We need to bring the two together. Otherwise, we're not going to make sure that we meet the objectives of this fund. That's a comment. Can I ask make a proposal? In your projects up to date, the biggest is that members have indicated is the 600 million given to Zimbabwe as fund managers. And you referred to the agricultural assistance program, 300 million, and the budget support for another 300 million. Can I suggest that we get a report from the fund manager about the transfer of this money but also to get a report from the implementing agencies on what exactly happened with this 600 million. And it'll be reported to this committee, to Parliament, that we can evaluate it. We went to Budbridge last week. We didn't have this information to talk to the ordinary people about what South Africa is doing in South Africa, in Zimbabwe, and how far this money and project has developed and supported another country, in this case Zimbabwe. Can I ask that the department inform this committee about the, as a fund manager, about this two projects, and also a report from the implementing agencies on the progress on these two reports? But this is by far the biggest project of the ARF in one single country. Thank you.
Honorable Mubu. Thank you, Chair. Just a couple of comments. The first one is on the issue of Guinea-Conakry. Like I said earlier, I observed that there have been a military coup in Guinea-Conakry. My question will be whether our government recognizes that government, and whether we're justified even in pumping money in a country where democratization has been threatened. Secondly, in the Sahrawi Democratic Republic, I know that there's a dispute because Morocco is occupying that country illegally against the AU resolution, but that our government recognizes the liberation movement of the Sahrawi Republic. And so as a result, that our representative in Morocco, South African ambassador, I think it's actually not recognized by the Moroccan government, or he has not been accredited or something like that. Just a comment from you. And then the other thing I just want to find out is, I look at this report, the breakdown of the table. There are a number of projects that have been finalized, but there is no indication as to when these were finalized. They are only years of commencement of the project. And if I may ask a question, if I want a report on the 2.5 million which was spent on Kenya to assist the African Economic Research Consortium, would I be able to get that? All the finalized documents, projects, if I ask for the reports, would I be able to get them? Thank you, Chair.
Mr. Short, your last shot now.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, the criteria for funding is very much prescribed to us by the Act. The objects of the fund, Article 4, refers to how the funds can be used. But from experience and from looking at the way that the advisory committee would argue on the merits of each project, I think one can pick up a couple of points there. One is, why should the ARF be funding this? Why should some other department, if a project comes to us and it's an environmental project, the question is, why should that department not take the responsibility? Why should the ARF fund it? So it's the placement. Is this thing, does it come to us correctly in terms of are we not interfering with another department's line function? I think a second issue is the sustainability. Is this project sustainable? Chair, the members of this advisory committee include, as I said, my Director General, as well as Deputy Director General Moodley. And there's a very tough, a very robust debate on each of these presentations where they go through what is this project aimed at, you know, the amounts, who will benefit, what will the outcome of this be. So there is a rigorous debate that is followed by the, or a questioning by the advisory committee. Chair, in terms of Zimbabwe, the two amounts, the 2 times 300, I think from your question and from the question about the suggestion, Chair, I can relay that to the two departments. But I would suggest that discussion takes place with the Department of Agriculture on the 300 million. And Madam, can I just again assure you that the money did not go for agricultural reform. There was nothing for agricultural reform. So it went for the agricultural program was for emergency food supply, it was for seed, and it was for diesel. So it was not for agricultural reform. The power, Madam, again, we hosted the conference. I'm aware of the plans to set up a power organization in South Africa. Maybe you'll know more about that than what I do. I think we would be open to receive any requests from POW about that office. But I think the political side of it, the merit of having an organization like that in the continent and having it in South Africa, I think that was for a political debate to discuss that, not for us. If you say Africa Multilateral, I am from Africa Multilateral branch where I look after NAPAD and APRM. I don't look after African Union. I used to, but I can ask my colleagues about POW. The whole thing about public diplomacy, how do South Africans know about the fund? Chair, if the AF was going to continue for another, if there was no end date, I think this would have been a serious issue for us to look at. What can we do about branding the African Renaissance Fund? I think the advantage that we have now is that, yes, we'll play out the African Renaissance Fund. SAPA will come. The question is, how are we going to brand SAPA? I think that's where the question must be. Are we going to brand it? And if the answer is yes, then how? How do we do it? I think it's very important that we, and I like, sir, if you permit me to say, I think your line of a good story told badly. What we must remember is that there are a couple of money streams from South Africa into Africa. By far the biggest is our contribution to SACU, to the Customs Union. That is bigger than, the amounts there, as I referred to just now about telephone numbers. Those are telephone number amounts. Secondly, it is through departmental contributions, departments that are involved in the African continent, and through their departmental budgets, they fund some projects. That I would reckon is the second biggest. The third biggest would be the National Treasury use of the RDP fund. How they use the RDP fund for funding programs in Africa. The fourth one, and by far the smallest, is DARF. So, Chair, when we look at the debate about should we be spending the money in South Africa or should we be just spending it outside? How many houses can we build for the amounts of money that we spend? I think the question must be applied to all of the money streams, not just to the smallest one, which is the ARF. It's a bigger debate, and I think it's an ongoing debate about how much money do we spend outside vis-a-vis how much money do we spend inside. There is an international standard. When we go to G8 meetings, the African countries insist on a percentage. There's a specific percentage that comes from Kananaskis and from Glen Eagles. The question is, how does that apply to us as South Africa? So I think this is a political debate, that we should not just be looking at the smaller amount from the ARF, but how much money does South Africa spend outside of? And then when we've done the debate, I think then comes the question, how does public diplomacy come into it? How do we brand it? What do we tell our own people? So, Chair, I would say that this issue is bigger than the ARF. We should elevate it. I would really suggest that the committee look into that, Chair. The weakness And I'm very glad that the Honourable Quinoff has referred to that, the project management capacity. I think that's one of the principal lessons that we've learned from the ARF, that you cannot just rely on other implementers, that you have to have your in-house project management capability. And I do hope that that is maybe something that we can do for SATPA. The establishment, the design of SATPA is not out yet, but I think it's one of the what SATPA has done is to, or the task team has done is to go and visit to other countries and to look at their models. And in the models that they are looking at, most of the models reflect some type of a capacity for project management. So I hope that's a way that we can go. In terms of Guinea-Conakry and Morocco, I've responded to Guinea-Conakry. The Morocco one, the recognition to Sadr, I can confirm that our head of mission in Rabat is in Chargé, Ambassador Curtis Leka. Although his official title is ambassador, he carries the title of ambassador, but he is in fact the chargé. It's a political debate, so I don't want to go into recognition for this party or that party. And then, Chair, maybe just to end, I think the suggestion of maybe it will not be practical to bring all of the fund or the project implementers to the meeting, but maybe the two in Zimbabwe. That would be, I think, very practical, and that's something that we could convey to those departments. Thank you, Chair.
There's a question of mine that was not answered regarding the reports on individual projects that have been completed. Are they available?
Sorry, I left that one. Yes, they are. As I said to the committee, that every year we publish an annual report. And I'm sure the committee will have the annual reports from the beginning. So we can just see if we can get previous copies and send it to the members. In the reports would then be, I've got an example here, it would give the full project description, the program itself, sub-programs, objectives, the output and actions, the service delivery indicators, the key performance indicators, and then the target measures achieved, not achieved, way forward. So it gives the full description. That is available in the public domain. So it's available to you. So we've as I said earlier, we've recently published the latest one, the 2009-10, and the full description of projects is available there.
Our understanding is that these reports, or all these, are housed under DICO. Therefore, DICO can be able to answer on all these questions. That's what we want. So, I think in the next meeting on the 11th, when we're dealing with SATPA, we might first want to have a session. Just maybe the first hour spending on just interrogating those progress reports, so that we're very clear as to what is happening. We must do some appraisal on that. The request is very clear from the members of this committee. It's emphasized by a number of the members, starting from Honorable Sunduza Korenov and Mubu, that we certainly want to make sure that we do the real oversight by interrogating some of these projects. And as I've already said, we want to confirm those projects on our own as part of our oversight. Hence, our focus as the committee in terms of outside oversight visits will be to some of these countries. And we think that you must also prepare the high commissioners and ambassadors in these countries, that as and when we come, we will also we will also be interrogating them on all these activities. With that, let's thank you for the information you've given us, and we apologize for this title we've given to you. Ironically, it came from Diego. I don't want to say it was misinformation. Maybe it was misunderstanding from our side,